Welcome to our first Wednesday night Christmas Fest. We expected it would be a bit small because we're just starting. As I explained Sunday, the reason why we're having these is because we notice people are getting increasingly more stressed out, and we wanted to do a bit of relief work for them by having a midweek Krishna Fest. Any opportunity to glorify Krishna. We'll just chant a little tiny bit more, and then we'll speak of it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna book. we're going to hear about Krishna's activities when the Supreme Absolute Truth appeared in this world 5,000 years ago. Of course, Krishna is always present, but we don't have the qualifications to see Krishna. That is the problem. It's actually very perverse to demand to see the Supreme without qualification. Just like if you have something medically wrong with you, and you demand to understand from your own analysis what's wrong with you, and you have no qualification. That would be crazy. Similarly, to demand to see Krishna with no qualification is also crazy. Everything requires qualification. To be a doctor, to be a lawyer who can look at the law and understand how it's been applied, to be a computer specialist. Say, oh, Josh, he's a computer specialist. He can look and understand. So, everything takes qualification. Even to cook. Some of the ladies here, they're learning how to cook, and they're realizing it takes qualification. Or to sew. Why do we think that when it comes to God, Supreme Absolute Truth, I can see without qualification? And because I can't see anything, that means there is no Supreme. This is actually very demoniac, to invest so much power in your own seeing when your senses are so limited. Krishna consciousness means to develop the qualifications to see Krishna. But why do you stress seeing Krishna so much? What about hearing Krishna? There's no difference between seeing Krishna with the eyes and hearing Krishna with the ears. There's no loss of experience by hearing Krishna. But when you apply your mundane judgment, you think, well, if I hear the name of my beloved, that doesn't mean my beloved is there. So, similarly, if I chant Krishna's name, I won't be satisfied because there's a difference between the name and the person. Not at all. We don't explain this to beginners because actually it's improper. One of the offenses you can make in chanting Hare Krishna is to explain the confidential glories of the holy name to the unfaithful. Once Srila Prabhupada was speaking to a sort of famous musician of his time, he's still around these days, called Donovan. So, he was talking to Srila Prabhupada. As most of you know, I'm sure, the founder of the Krishna Conscious Movement in the West, and also responsible for its revitalization in India. So Donovan came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was explaining to him the basics of what the human form of life is, and Donovan was proving to be not very intelligent. So Prabhupada telling him, if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll become qualified. And the musician was kind of, why should I do that? So then one devotee thought he would help his spiritual master. He would help Srila Prabhupada out. And he began to explain, we chant Hare Krishna because Krishna is non-different from his name. And in Krishna's name, you have Krishna. Prabhupada stopped him. Stop. He said right in front of Donovan, you are explaining the glories of the holy name to the unfaithful. So, unfaithful means persons who have no appreciation or desire to appreciate. How would you like someone explaining your personal life to just anybody who, the most cynical or callous person, and someone wants to explain your personal intimate affairs, you wouldn't like it. a Krishna is a person. And therefore we do not explain Krishna's personal glories to those who are particularly envious or callous or aggressively malicious. Most people don't fit in that category. Most people, they just don't know anything and don't care to push the point. But some people, they're so unfortunate that even though they don't know anything, still they're proud and arrogant. That problem's always there. We're going to read about Krishna's battle with a mystic witch. Now, witches have always been around, just like sorcerers have been around. Better to understand that these are just human beings with certain powers that other human beings may not have. It's all a question of knowing the art. You know the art, you can make these flags up here. You know the art, you can sew clothes, like you see there on the altar. If you know the art, you can fly on a stick, like a witch. It's all a question of knowing the art. Just like about a year and a half ago, I didn't know how to swim. It's certain arts you have to learn. Mainly it's breathing. You have to learn how to breathe underwater. Until you learn how to breathe naturally underwater, swimming is a real problem. Then you have to understand that basically, you know, when you're swimming, you are a breathing tank with arms and legs on it. So, it's an art to it. I took lessons from a teacher. He taught me how to stroke like this, back, and tuck the water behind you like that. So just like you can learn the art of swimming, similarly you can learn the art of flying on a twig or a little stick. In the West, they know these things as witches flying on broomsticks. And that comes from India, where the witches actually know how to fly on just a stick. It doesn't have to be a broomstick. Just a little twig or stick. They know how to use that to go anywhere. So, in India these things are concerned, they're considered nothing special. Just a question of, do you know how to do it or not? Just like yogis, they can dip into a holy river and take their bath in four rivers simultaneously. They know the art, how to take their bath in four holy rivers at the same time. Or they can go into the river at one point and appear thousands of kilometers away at another point in the river. It's just all knowing the art. So this particular witch, she knew the art of how to transform herself into a very beautiful woman, even though she was actually naturally very ugly and hideous. She was especially adept at the art of killing small babies. Some witches are like that because they're just envious of little babies. Sometimes even witches, they like to eat small babies because the skin is so tender and soft. Just like human beings, they like to eat physical mating veal. They like to kill calves and consider it a great delicacy, baby veal. Similarly, witches, some witches, they like to kill and eat small children. This particular witch, her name is Putana, and she was recruited by a demoniac king, Kamsa, to kill small children in general in the hopes that one of the children she would kill would be Krishna. Kamsa was concerned that he was destined to be killed by Krishna. There was an omen to that effect. So he was doing everything at his means, every means he had to kill Krishna. He didn't know where Krishna was, but he was getting rid of small children everywhere by one ruse or another. So Putana, although actually very hideous, she transformed herself into a beautiful woman. This is once again knowing the art, the ability of how to change your bodily form. Sometimes when people are talking about aliens, they remark how the aliens have an ability to what they call shapeshift, change their appearance into whatever they like. That's no big deal. Just once again knowing the art. So Putana could do that. And she goes to the town where Krishna is staying, the small village of Vrindavan, to accomplish her mission. And we're going to hear about that. While Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father, was returning home, he considered Vasudev's warning that there might be some disturbance in Gokula. Certainly the advice was friendly and not false, so Nanda thought, there's some truth in it. Therefore, out of fear, he began to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is quite natural for a devotee in danger to think of Krishna because he has no other shelter. When a child is in danger, he takes shelter of his mother or father. Similarly, a devotee is always under the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when he specifically sees some danger, he remembers the Lord very rapidly. After consulting with his demoniac ministers, Kamsa instructed a witch named Putana, who knew the black art of killing small children by ghastly, sinful methods, to kill all kinds of children in the cities, villages, and pasturing grounds. Sounds very bad, doesn't it? Sending a witch who knows the art of killing small children by ghastly, sinful methods. Such things never happen today, right? Huh? Ghastly is horrible. I'm sure that... You understand? So, you think it never happens today? What do you mean? So many abortions going on? Isn't that killing small children by ghastly, sinful methods? Destroying the child in the womb? So you've got millions of Putanas all around you. Such witches can play their black art only where there is no chanting or hearing of the holy name of Krishna. It is said that wherever there is the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, even negligently, all bad elements, witches, ghosts, and dangerous calamities immediately disappear. And this is certainly true of the place where the chanting of the holy name of Krishna is done seriously, especially in Vrindavan, when the Supreme Lord was personally present. Therefore, the doubts of Nanda Maharaj were certainly based on affection for Krishna. Actually, there was no danger from the activities of Putana, despite her powers. Such witches are called Kichari, which means they can fly in the sky. This black art of witchcraft is still practiced by some women in the remote northwestern side of India. They can transfer themselves from one place to another on the branch of an uprooted tree. Putana knew this witchcraft, and therefore she is described in the Bhagavatam as Kichari. So they get these powers by cultivating various black arts. Many times they have to ally themselves with evil entities in order to get these powers. And therefore they come under the control of these evil entities. Putana entered the county of Gokula, the residential court of Nanda Maharaj, without permission. Dressing herself just like a beautiful woman, she entered the house of Mother Yasoda. She appeared very beautiful, with raised hips, nicely swollen breasts, earrings and flowers in her hair. She looked especially beautiful on account of her thin waist. She was glancing at everyone with very attractive looks and smiling face, and all the residents of Vrindavan were captivated. The innocent cowherd women thought that she was a goddess of fortune appearing in Vrindavan with a lotus flower in her hand. It seemed to them that she had personally come to see Krishna, who is her husband. Because of her exquisite beauty, no one checked her movement, and therefore she freely entered the house of Nanda Maharaj. So she's disguised. She's very hideous, but she's able to transform her external appearance into that of the most beautiful woman. And you're hearing the Vedic standard of beauty. Beautiful hair, earrings, flowers in the hair, raised hips, nicely swollen breasts. This is the Vedic standard. And thin waist. Very, you don't see that these days. Very rare to see. Thin waist. And top and bottom big. It's the Vedic standard. Real female beauty. Very thin waist. And top and bottom big. These are all symptoms of another age before human beings became so degraded due to bad living habits, bad eating, bad sleeping, everything bad. Destroys bodily health, destroys bodily beauty. And if you walked around with flowers in your hair, what would people think? You walked around with flowers in your hair. You think you're crazy, huh? Why? Because flowers are expensive. They think, why are you putting it in your hair? Shows you another sign of the times that because flowers are rare and you have to buy them in a shop, generally, people think, oh, why are you putting them in your hair? I know when I'm wearing garlands, they always, I love the garland specialist, that Juliet. So they give me these garlands to wear when I'm leaving at the airport. Well, because they make them with such devotion, I wear them on the airplane, even though when I get to the other country, I can't bring them into the country. So while I'm getting on the airplane, everyone's looking. Flower garland. Who are you? All the flight attendant ladies are, oh, I bet that's nice. Yeah, it's a flower, you know, flowers. It's like they act like it's a rare thing, you know? Sometimes they get so caught up in it, I just take the garland off and give it to them.
Flowers.
But such things were common in Vedic culture. Everyone knew what natural beauty is. Even this witch who's just pretending, she's conjured up this beautiful form. Still, she knows how to conjure up a beautiful form. How would we read about the witch today? She appeared very beautiful with what? What's today's standard of female beauty? She appeared very beautiful, very thin. What else? After spending every day of the week at the fitness center, very thin. Isn't it the models? They think the models, when they're very skinny, they're very attractive. Yeah? That's the Kali Yuga standard. Very thin. Cut off your hair. Close cropped hair. Yeah. Huh? Yes, because they're so miserable. Acne. Or take some makeup on your face. Eyeshadow. Fingernail polish. Made of all. Fingernail polish made of all sorts of toxic chemicals. What else? So, Putana, she's dressed with a beautiful sari. And how are the devastating beauties of today dressed? Either a super short skirt or a long skirt with a slit way up. Clothes made of polyester, acrylic, and things like that. Where at least Putin, I know, has put on a silk sari, naturally made, beautiful colors. But people have no idea what is real beauty. Even from the material point of view. You can just watch out the window here when people are going out at night. You see what they think is the standard of beauty. They all like to wear black because that makes the lady look very slender. And men like this. Everything is upside down today. No one knows even what is proper materialism. So Putana snuck into the house, and the residents of Vrindavan, Krishna's devotees, they're very innocent. They weren't suspicious at all. they thought she's coming to offer something to Krishna. Everyone wants to offer something to Krishna. Why should we be skeptical? Why should we be suspicious? Especially this one, she's so beautiful. Because of her exquisite beauty, no one checked her movement. And therefore she freely entered the house of Nanda Maharaj. Putana, the killer of many, many children, found baby Krishna lying on a small bed, and she could at once perceive that the baby was hiding his unparalleled potencies. Putana thought, this child is so powerful that he can destroy the whole universe immediately. She had that much understanding. But still, it didn't stop her from trying to do her horrible task. So Srila Prabhupada explains to you, Putana's understanding is very significant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is situated in everyone's heart. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that he gives one necessary intelligence and he also causes one to forget. Putana was immediately aware that the child whom she was observing in the house of Nanda Maharaj was the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. He was lying there as a small baby, but that does not mean he was less powerful. The materialistic theory that God worship is anthropomorphic is not correct. What that means, anthropomorphism means to think that God is just a creation of the human mind. We look at humans and what they do, and then we project a God. It's like that. So you might think, because we have experience of babies in this world, therefore we conjure up this idea of baby Krishna. But actually it's the reverse. The material world is the reflection of the spiritual world. No living being can become God by undergoing meditation or austerities. God is always God. Krishna, as the child baby, is as complete as he is as a full-fledged youth. Now when you were a little baby, were you as complete as you are now as an adult? No. When you were a small baby, there were so many things you couldn't do. You could not protect yourself. You couldn't even eat certain things. So many limitations. And of course now that you're an adult, there's so many limitations. But in the relative sense, you could say that in your adult life you are complete. But the fact is that in your baby life you were incomplete. But for Krishna, it's no different. Whether he's small baby or teenager, he never ages beyond teenage. Everyone would love to be a teenager forever with no problems. But everyone knows teenage life is full of problems. Teenage life seems to be, it should be, magic years in which you're discovering your senses, you're discovering romance, you're discovering having a bit of freedom. Actually, of course, teenage years are quite painful and can become very ruinous. One mistake made when you're a teenager can set you back for a long time. But Krishna is the perfection of a teenager, and he never ages beyond teenager. He has no problems with teenager bears. In our teenage years, we just get false promises of happiness. And we're harassed by lust. We don't know what to do. Just something hits us. Before we were 11 or 12 years old, everything was fine in that department. And all of a sudden, we get hit with a storm of these desires. And everything in society these days is working to agitate those desires. Right now, Hollywood's about to unleash a special batch of teenage movies, R-rated, because they got it all calculated. We give it an R rating, that means it's got some spice in there, and then all the young girls, even though they're not 16, you have to be 16 to see an R-rated movie, but this will cause all the girls 14 and 15, or even 13, to try to sneak in to see it, and that way it'll cause a sensation. He's doing all these things on purpose. The movies are horrible. They're about to release a whole batch of them in the States. How to make money. They went to all the TV shows and got the best, quote-unquote, teenage actors and actresses. And they are making all these horrible films with them. I don't even want to talk about what the plots are and the scenes. Girls bribing boys in the high school to corrupt a girl who hasn't been corrupted. They're making bets. You succeed, we give you this. If you lose, then this happens, you have to do that. All sorts of things like that. They're making these for young teenagers. How can any young person these days stand a chance in controlling senses, maintaining purity? Impossible. So they were, these teenage actresses and actors, they were defending themselves, saying, we're not, you know, doing anything wrong. We're actually doing a service to society by giving an honest portrayal of what high school life is like. We're artists. We're actually, you know, presenting reality. There's a lot of pain in high school, and everyone knows simply so much sex goes on. So we're presenting real life. We're artists contributing to society. So the demoniac persons who control the movie industry, they got it all figured out. We make it an R-rated movie, and technically speaking, under 16 years old, they're not supposed to go, but they'll all want to sneak in. It'll become like a fad. All the younger 13, 14, 15 year old teenage girls will all try to sneak in, and it'll become like a hip thing. Did you sneak in? Oh, I snuck in. Did you see it? Oh, I saw it. They're manipulating like this just to make money. And therefore, teenage life is so problematic because they see these things on the screen and then they want to act out what they see. For Krishna, there's no problem in teenage years. Krishna eternally has the perfection of loving affairs. In fact, Krishna started his loving affairs when he was 8 years old to show you that it's got nothing to do with material body. Spiritual, no matter. The Mayavadi theory holds that the living entity was formerly God, but now has become overwhelmed by the influence of Maya. Therefore, they say that presently he is not God, but when the influence of Maya is taken away, then he, the living entity, again becomes God. This is the bogus, impersonalist Mayavadi idea that you are God, but you've forgotten. And therefore, you need to go to such and such yoga or meditation course, and then you'll remember your God after paying a large fee. So many of these bogus so-called spiritual teachers, they say, I am God, you are God, the only difference between me and you is that I remember I'm God and you have forgotten. But if you enroll in my course, then you can realize you are God. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada had his famous challenge. You say you are God, so if I kick on your face, what will you do? God means invincible, supreme. If I kick on your face, you won't be able to do anything. So there's no question of becoming God. You either are or you are not. And the position is already filled. No applicants need apply. The position is eternally filled. And you are eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Krishna doesn't have to practice yoga and meditation in order to make it from a small baby into godhood. Krishna is equally the Supreme whether he's a small baby or a teenager. He just plays in different ways, but the same unlimited power is there. Living entities are minute parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are minute particles or sparks of the Supreme Fire, but are not the original fire, or Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even from the beginning of his appearance in the house of Vasudeva and Devaki. So by Krishna's action in the heart of the witch, she got a glimpse that this is no ordinary child. She thought, this child is so powerful that he can destroy the whole universe immediately. Then Krishna switched things, because Krishna controls perception. So he switched. Krishna showed the nature of a small baby and closed his eyes as if to avoid the face of Putana. This closing of the eyes is interpreted and studied in different ways by the devotees. Some say that Krishna closed his eyes because he did not like to see the face of Putana, who had killed so many children and who had now come to kill him. Others say that something extraordinary was being dictated to her, and in order to give her assurance, Krishna closed his eyes so that she would not be frightened. And yet others interpret in this way. Krishna appeared to kill the demons and give protection to the devotees, as is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Kritranaya sarinam vanashaya chaduskritam. The first demon to be killed was a woman. According to Vedic rules, the killing of a woman, a brahmana, cows, or a child is forbidden. Krishna was obliged to kill the demon Putana, and because the killing of a woman is forbidden according to Vedic Shastra, he could not help but close his eyes. Another interpretation is that Krishna closed his eyes because he simply took Putana to be his nurse. Putana came to Krishna just to offer her breast for the Lord to suck. Krishna is so merciful that even though he knew Putana was there to kill him, he took her as his nurse mother. So now we have the dramatic moment. Krishna is about to suck the breast of the Putana demon. She had carefully prepared her breast by putting poison on them, so when Krishna would suck her breast, he would suck the poison. Look how hideous she was. Can you imagine such? But everything is for Krishna's pleasure, even when a demoness comes to him as a baby. He's a baby, and she's coming with poison-smeared breasts, offering her breast milk. Krishna will have fun killing her, even as a little baby. When the baby Krishna closed his eyes, Putana took him on her lap. She did not know that she was holding death personified. If a person mistakes a snake for a rope, he dies. Similarly, Putana killed so many babies before meeting Krishna, but now she was accepting the snake that would kill her immediately. When Putana was taking baby Krishna on her lap, both Yashoda, that's Krishna's mother, and Rohini, Krishna's aunt, were present, but they did not forbid her because she was so beautifully dressed and because she showed motherly affection for Krishna. They could not understand that she was a sword within a decorated case. Putana had smeared a very powerful poison on her breast, and immediately after taking the baby on her lap, she pushed her breastly nipple within his mouth. She was hoping that as soon as he would suck her breast, he would die. That was her job. But what happened instead? What do you think happened instead? Ordinarily, someone comes. You see, it doesn't happen these days, but I think even in early days in Western culture, and certainly in other cultures, not only a mother would nurse her child, but other women, they would also nurse babies. So, No one questioned when this beautiful-looking woman came to show motherly affection to Krishna by nursing him. And, of course, she had poison on her breast. You would expect that as soon as the little innocent babe would take the breast in his mouth to suck the milk, that would be the end. But instead, it was the end of Putana. What did Krishna do? Baby Krishna very quickly took the nipple in anger. He sucked the milk poison along with the light air of the demon. Not only did he suck the milk and the poison, he also sucked out her life. In other words, Krishna simultaneously sucked the milk from her breast and killed her by sucking out her life. There you go. Krishna is so merciful that because the demon Putana came to offer her breast milk to him, he fulfilled her desire and accepted her activity as motherly. But to stop her from further nefarious activities, he immediately killed her. And because the demon was killed by Krishna, she got liberation. However you come in contact with Krishna, even if Krishna kills you, you get benefited. Krishna is all good. However you come in contact with the all good, there's good. But don't think, oh, I know, I'll get liberation, I'll become a demon, and then Krishna kills me. I'll very easily go back to the spiritual world. You see, Krishna doesn't kill ordinary demons. These are very special demons. It's easy, much easier for you to become Krishna conscious than to become a very special demon and be killed by Krishna. When Krishna sucked out her very breath, Putana fell down on the ground, spread her arms and legs, and began to cry, "Oh, child, leave me! Leave me!" She was crying loudly and perspiring, and her whole body became wet. As she died, screaming, there was a tremendous vibration both on the earth and in the sky in all directions, and people thought that thunderbolts were falling. Thus the nightmare of the Putana witch was over, and she assumed her real feature as a great demon. Because Krishna was killing her, sucking out her life air, she couldn't maintain her psychic disguise anymore. So she lost control of her shape-shifting ability, and she went back to her, as she was dying, she went back to her natural form as a huge, hideous demon. She opened her fierce mouth and spread her arms and legs all over. She fell exactly as Vritrasura when struck by the thunderbolt of Indra. You have to read the sixth canto of Bhagavatam to know about that. Who here has read the sixth canto? We know about Vritrasura. The long hair on her head was scattered all over her body. Her fallen body extended up to 12 miles and was smashed, and it smashed all the trees to pieces. And everyone was struck with wonder upon seeing this gigantic body. Her teeth appeared just like plowed roads, and her nostrils appeared like mountain caves. Her breasts appeared like small hills, and her hair was a vast reddish bush. Her eye sockets appeared like blind wells, and her two thighs appeared like two banks of a river. Her two hands appeared like two strongly constructed bridges, and her abdomen seemed like a dried-up lake. All the cowherd men and women became struck with awe and wonder upon seeing this, and the tumultuous sound of her falling shocked their brains and ears and made their hearts beat strongly. So there's Krishna, a baby of a few months, killing. He can kill as a three-month baby. He didn't have to learn any lessons in anti-terrorist tactics. He's equally the Supreme Personality of Godhead at 3 months old, or 8 years old, or 125 years. Makes no difference for Krishna. Therefore, by this activity of killing Putana, Krishna is showing there's no question of becoming God, there's no question of developing powers to be God. Either you are eternally the Supreme Personality of Godhead or you are not. And Krishna, even as a 3-month-old child, can demonstrate inconceivable activity.